Thank you all for coming. I want to introduce you to Lisa Carley, who we're developing a new connection. And as we said on the flyer that we sent out, Lisa has had an interesting journey through both struggling with emotional issues and spiritual issues. And what really connected us was I listened to a talk she did on unraveling religions and on a panel. It was a talk with some other people. And I was really impressed with the journey and how, Lisa, from what you and I have been talking about, you have this commitment to living holistically and following your intuition as well as reason and being really real about what's going on with you, to really go into that a little more deeply. And I really appreciate your willingness to be open and to discuss all of this.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. And I so appreciated the conversation that you and I shared, and also your openness with me and providing the space for me to share openly my experiences. So thank you for that.
So why don't we start with you filling people in a little bit more about you, a little bit about your background, and then we'll kind of get into some of the experiences you've been going through.
So currently, I'm a homeschool teacher for a 12-year-old. And so I teach all of the subjects. And that has been just a remarkable experience for me to work with just one child for an extended period of time and to work with one family. My background has been as an educator in a couple different capacities for 20 years. For the better part of 20 years, I taught college. About 2 years ago, I shifted into teaching middle and high school in like a traditional public school. And then I lived in India last year because I'm also a journalist. And I moved to India to work as a journalist. Then I moved back to California again to teach. To take a teaching position with students, mostly with learning disabilities or unique challenges. And then I was offered another opportunity to have this, to become this homeschool teacher. So that's kind of the, I guess the resume version.
Right. So you really have teaching in your bones.
I have teaching in my bones, 100%.
Early on, you were telling me you had what you thought were everyday experiences that everybody had, but it took you a while to figure out that they were kind of different.
Yes,
Can you
definitely. Yes.
talk a little bit about that?
When I was I very clearly remember the first time that I have a conscious memory of something happening that I guess an experience of being really deeply moved by something, by an external stimulus or something that happened in my environment. And that was when I was about 8 or 9. And my mother had made me a dress for Easter Sunday. And she used to make most of my clothes. And I remember that, like, we were just finishing up the dress before Easter Sunday, and I was standing on the stool as I often did while she was finishing the hem, and she poked me, like, accidentally poked me
Right.
with the needle as she's doing the hemming. And I remember that just like there was a sensation that came with that that was more than just kind of like feeling like I was being poked by a needle. And so then in a church the following day, when we were at mass, I grew up Catholic, and so when I was at mass, I had this experience of being in church and looking at the crucifix in front of me and all of a sudden feeling that similar stabbing pain. And feeling it, throughout my body in a very profound way. And it was extremely painful. And I still remember that viscerally in my body. not knowing, of course, at a young age, like what to do with that, how do I respond to that, what is happening to me, that I then looked up at the crucifix again and felt this just compassion wash through me, this sense of peace. And I think that was probably my first what I would call spiritual experience that I was conscious of. I remember not really knowing quite what to do with it, and not knowing if I should talk about it, but I think that I did talk about it, and finding that it wasn't really understood, and re getting the message from the people around me that, this is a very unusual thing, and remembering feeling just a little bit odd about it. Is this normal? Is this, do other people have these experiences? And I think it took me some time to realize that the experiences that I had weren't normal. And as I've grown up and have been more open about the multitude of, since then, of spiritual experiences that I've had, that in fact, not many people have experienced those things.
Do you remember, did you talk to your parents or? You were in a Catholic school?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school. I don't have a crystal clear memory of, like talking to my parents about like what had happened. My memory is that they, maybe there was an awareness that something had happened, because I viscerally reacted to it in church. That I do remember. But I don't remember what the words were that were spoken around that experience. I don't remember how that was framed exactly, so with them.
The feeling you had is that it wasn't something being shared and nobody quite knew what to do with it, but
Yes,
nobody sent you
definitely
off
that.
for mental
Yes.
treatment somewhere.
Yes, that I, yes.
Right. So then you learned to kind of be quiet about it, but experiences continued through your childhood.
I had a few other experiences as a child, but really it was in my 20s when I started to have multitude of experiences that I wasn't able to fully explain, and even experiences that were shared with another person in particular, and like shared dreams, shared visions, and that was really mind-blowing for me. That's when things really started to, like, I guess the veil started to be lifted from my experience, that it wasn't just happening, like in my own isolated world, that someone else was actually experiencing the same things that I was.
Okay.
And so that was very, and I absolutely at that time did not have the framework around me to be able to integrate that in any way. And I think that was a beginning point of a pretty, a really difficult time in my life, of, am I going mad? What are these experiences? I just didn't have the right community in place to help, navigate that.
Right. Were you still a practicing Catholic?
Yes, but in fact, so this really kind of started when I was 22, and I was still very much practicing Catholic. Not only a practicing Catholic, but was very seriously considering joining the convent. And I was teaching catechism. I had taught catechism since I was a child, like 13 years old, 13, 14, and I felt very called to a monastic life in the Catholic Church. But at that time, I also, there were several things that came together that started to make me question my faith. And as it happened, the woman that I lived with, when I was in college, she was a practicing Buddhist. So she invited me to go to the Zen Center in Woodstock, New York, Mount Tremper. I started finding that the Buddhist path gave me more spaciousness to start exploring these things that were happening to me. As a result, I ended up leaving the church completely at that point.
So you're having experiences that you didn't understand, but
Correct.
you knew you weren't the only one, and you were
Yes,
struggling
yes.
in the Catholic faith. Did you think you needed to seek psychological help or anything like that?
Well, when I was 24, I had a complete mental breakdown and was hospitalized for a suicide attempt. So I think that all of these huge changes were happening, and I didn't have enough of the support and structure to be able to move through that in a way that would, I think, in retrospect, have been much healthier. But I think it was that mental break that really cracked open my identity as a spiritual person, not just a religious person. And that was something that I made a really big distinction of at that point in my life.
So can you talk a little more about how that you called it a breakdown? How long were you in the hospital?
I think it was 7 days at that point. Yeah.
Right. So it wasn't just like an overnight emergency room visit.
No, it was, I was hospitalized. Yeah.
So how did that help you realize your spirit, that you are a spiritual person, or this psychological experience, suicidality, being in a psychiatric hospital, actually opened you up to a realization of your spiritual beingness? I don't know if that's the right way to put it. Does that sound about right?
Yes, but I would say that it wasn't the hospitalization itself. It was actually the circumstances around me, around the suicide attempt itself. So I was in a very, very close, deep friendship with someone, and this person was a person with whom I had started to have these kind of shared spiritual experiences with. This, I'm not sure how much detail you want me to go into, but I can start with just a general and then you can ask specific questions. But so I was not, I kind of knew that things weren't going well. So I decided to, I was living in Albany, New York. I think I had just finished school, and I had, like I said, I knew that things weren't going well. So I spoke to my parents and I said, look, I need some more support right now. So I went home. I stayed home for a bit. I think it was maybe a couple months, and made the decision that, I think I don't really know what's going on, but I don't think that I'm going to be able to manage this on my own. So I went back to Albany with the intent of packing up my bags and moving back in with my parents for a bit. So, like I said, I had this very close spiritual relationship with a very, very dear friend. And when I got back to the house in Albany, and no one knew that I was coming back, I didn't tell anyone that I was driving back to Albany. And somehow in the drive, the whatever 4 hour drive, however long it is, when I got back to Albany, I really started to feel things fall apart. Like the suicidal ideation increased significantly on the drive home. It was pretty severe by the time I got to Albany. When I walked into my room and I kind of like was brought back into my old life, it was so provocative for me that something happened, and I started, like, I could feel myself dissociating. And so I remember, like, I'm an avid journal writer, and I took all of my journals at that time and tied them up in a ribbon and was just like kind of preparing to go. And in the midst of that happening, I got a phone call from this friend who, remember, this is before cell phones. So, like, people call you where they think you are. And when he called, he knew instantly that something was wrong, even though I didn't tell him. I just was like, I'm just here. I'm think I'm gonna go back to Syracuse. Like, I was pretty calm on the phone, but he knew that something was wrong. I cut the call short, and then, I proceeded to like try to calm the thoughts. Like, I was feeling really anxious, and I was feeling like things were starting to fall apart. And so I had already started taking some meds for depression, and I took the entire bottle of meds. And so, in the midst of this happening, my friend actually showed up at my house and saved my life. And this is nothing short of a miracle, because he had never been to my house before. No one knew that I was even back in Albany. And I think for me, that was the first indication that there is something much bigger going on in the universe, that I like it. It sort of helped me to understand the previous experiences that I had, because it was like there is no other explanation for this. There just is no explanation. And I
So
think that that was a big opening for me of, whoa, there are some bigger forces here, some universal forces.
You did get hospitalized, and I'm just, did the hospitalization help?
I think the hospitalization helped only in terms of like that it regulated my system again. I was diagnosed at that point with manic depression, bipolar, and I think that one of the big things that happened is that I got sleep, which had become a huge problem for me. And so I think the first 3 days or something, I was just like, I think they, gave me like sedatives so that I basically slept for the first 3 days. And then it was then the next, 4 days after that, we're just kind of like basically trying to get my system back to, to some kind of regulation.
So I think I remember when we talked before, you said that you continued with medications and you continued with therapy, but you also continued to open up spiritually.
Yes, that is
And
correct.
when we were talking, what was really exciting for both of us is how the two seem to work together. Because, and again, a lot of times they work antagonistically. That
Yes.
a lot of people are afraid to talk to the mental health providers about certain spiritual experiences because they get interpreted as some kind of pathology.
Right.
And sometimes there are psychological issues, and people think they're spiritual experiences, but they're not. So
Right.
you were working that interface. And
Yes, very much so. Yes.
right. And so did you feel the mental health providers were open? Could you talk to them about your experiences, and could they understand what was going on, or were you hesitant to do that?
No, I felt like at that time, and it's really interesting to kind of to think about it now, but in Syracuse, New York, I was actually able to find a psychodynamic therapist. And that was extremely valuable. He was very helpful in terms of, speaking in language of shadow and speaking in the language of, the unconscious, and very open to the idea of symbolism and archetypes. We talked a lot about symbolism, and that really helped me to use symbolic language and to talk about it from that framework. So no, at that time I never felt like, at least with that therapist particularly, I never felt that I was kind of being forced into like a like a purely cognitive box.
Right. And you could talk to that person about your what you now realize were spiritual experiences.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
We're going back a ways, right?
Oh
Time.
yeah, this would have been in 95.
Yeah. And then you were on medication as well, right?
So yes, well, yes and no. So I was diagnosed, as I said, at that point with manic depression, and they so I can't take lithium because I have kidney issues. I think it was maybe a few years after that that they Tried Depakote as well, and it made me extremely ill, like very, very ill. They were kind of treating the depression side of it, which never was as much of an issue for me as the manic side. I had experienced more of the mania of like not being able to sleep and having racing thoughts, and and those were kind of the bigger symptoms I think that presented themselves. And like I said, I think it was in 98 or 99. Is that right? Yeah, I think it was 98 that I had another hospitalization, and that was from a manic episode that I went 4 days without sleep at all and started hallucinating, and I admitted myself into the hospital at that point.
So you've really been through it. Those can
I've
be,
been through it,
yeah.
definitely.
You seem very open now about your spiritual experiences and your mental health struggles. And
Yes.
do you feel, does it bother you to talk about having suffered bipolar disorder or needing to continue to try to control that?
No, it doesn't at all. And part of it is because and honestly, it never really did. I've always been very open about it. In fact, I'm probably more, or at least was more open about that than I was about the spiritual experiences.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, because, and maybe that's just because I feel that it was like a that I think people can understand mental illness. It's, especially over the last 20 years, I think it's definitely become more open that people talk about it. We know that there are 25% of people who report some mental illness. And that's just people who report it. So we know that people are experiencing this. And in my experience and talking to people, more people have experienced some, brush with mental illness, or they know somebody who's struggled with something. But I find much fewer people have experienced what I would call these more spiritual visionary experiences.
So, have you felt the stigma of when people realize you have bipolar disorder, or you talk about that, or you talk about you use the word you had a breakdown, and you use the term mental illness. You don't feel stigmatized by those?
No, I don't feel stigmatized by those. And part of that is because I'm also trained as a therapist, and I think it's very important that we normalize it in the same way that we would talk about, oh, you have high blood pressure, you have diabetes, you have, whatever it is, that I think we need to talk about it in the same terms. It helps people to be open about what's going on, and it also helps people to seek treatment. And I think especially in the mental health field or mental health sphere where people might be experiencing mental illness, that I think there's an idea of, oh, this is some deficit in me. Like I have to fix this on my own. If I'm manic, I need to sleep. If I'm anxious, I just need to calm down. Like whatever stories we tell ourselves. And some of that might be true. There are things that we can do to help ourselves. But I also believe and have experienced it personally that medication has also been an absolute lifesaver. So in 2021, 21, 22, I experienced a major depressive episode, very, very severe. 7 months, I couldn't get out of bed. I was losing weight. It was very, very bad. And I am like within a month of the onset of that, I immediately started, like, I got a psychiatrist and was looking at medicine as a, looking to psychopharmacology as a way to help get me out of this. And it took 7 months and multiple like iterations of changing dosage and adding medication and taking medication away, but it finally, like, it was like a light went on, and it completely changed everything for me.
I really appreciate your openness about this because I think there is something about destigmatizing and
Yes.
so let me me share with you, and I've been very open about this too. When I was in medical school, I knew I was getting interested in psychiatry, and it was very clear I had to be careful who I told in my around colleagues who I told that to. My medical school friends were okay with it. It was
Yeah.
the professors. And I remember
Yes.
once it must have been I was a third year student, and during an operation, they were finishing up an operation, and the chief resident was just talking as he was sewing. We were almost done. And he looked at me because I had been assisting and said, "So what specialty are you thinking of?" And it slipped out. I said psychiatry, and then mentally I gulped. And the guy just yelled at me, just
Oh my
yelled.
goodness.
It was so, I mean, even as a psychiatrist, there was a stigma being a psychiatrist, not
Oh my goodness.
right. And I get, when I tell people I'm a psychiatrist, I sometimes get a look, and some people suddenly get quiet because they think I'm going to read their mind and diagnose them.
Yes, exactly. Right,
Other
right.
people,
Don't analyze me.
right? And other people can't stop telling me what their problem is. So
Right,
it
right, right.
go both ways. But I get more funny looks when I tell people that I follow a Sufi tradition, and then they look
Yes.
at me and they kind of wrinkle their nose,
Yes.
like, and if they're polite, they'll say, "Oh, tell me about that." And but very often people will say, "Well, you're doing what? What you're doing what?" So I can resonate with you in terms of you're open, and the particular mental health issue you're dealing with, bipolar disorder, is getting a lot of press. And you can say that, and people, it's like saying, "Yeah, I have depression. I have manic depressive." People kind of know what that is. It isn't a sounding term, and it can be successfully managed, and people are very successful, and all of that stuff. But somehow, if I understand you right, this experience of dealing with that helped you open up spiritually.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe I mean, like I said, the opening to that was because of the experience that I had,
Right.
where this, like I said, this person literally saved my life.
Right.
And so then I started to have, I think that there's a couple things that are coming to mind, so forgive my, rush of thoughts coming in. But so I think one of the aspects of it is that when you have a spiritual experience, it's contained within you, and you don't often someone else isn't sharing that. Like if you see something, or if you have a premonition about something, or whatever it is, that you it's only in you, it's only your experience, it's not shared by someone else. There's not necessarily an outward sign that something has happened. Whereas if you're depressed, or if you're having a manic episode, or if you're feeling anxious, or you have a panic attack, that's visual. Someone can see it, right? And so for me to say to the people in my life, especially people who've known me over a period of time, "Oh yeah, I have manic depression." They're like, "Oh yeah, I've seen that, right? Like I've seen you
Right.
depressed. I've seen you in a manic state. Yeah, that's fine." Okay. So there's a sense of, yeah, I get it. But spiritual experiences are almost always internal, right? No one else is a witness to it. And so I think that in a way, that almost feels more like, oh my God, is this real? Is this, am I crazy? Am I like, what was that? And I think for a long time, it was like always trying to reinterpret it. And so, I mean, just for point of like, I think it's really important, and I want to kind of make sure that I integrate this into our talk at some point, is the Enneagram. So my personality type is a 5, a 4, and a 1. And the 5 is very cerebral. Like we analyze everything. And the 4 is deeply, deeply intuitive, which is more of that kind of spiritual open, and then the 1 is trying to do something with it in the world, right? So it's like I have these ideas, I've had these experiences, I'm trying to make sense of them, and I want to do something in the world with it. And so that's kind of the unique like Enneagram combination that I have. And the reason why I bring that up is because it's the four part of myself I think that I struggle with the most, because that's the part that's deeply intuitive, and that's the part that I feel like is the hardest for other people to access in me. It's so present and relevant in me, that deep intuition about something, that knowing about something, but it's the part of me that is the least accessible to anyone outside of me. And so that becomes a very paradoxical way to live, if that makes sense. And so that's why I say that having these kind of spiritual experiences, and maybe we just need to take a step back and like ground, what do I mean by a spiritual experience? What does that mean? Well, for me, it's been like, I mean, I can give a dozen, easily a dozen more experiences. But one that I will share that was probably like other than, having my life saved by someone, the next situation happened was when I was in India in 2020. And I had met this young boy, and at the place that I was staying, he was 8 years old at the time, and his name was Suri, Suri. And he just absolutely bonded to me, and he spent every waking moment with me. And first thing in the morning, he would be at my door and very politely waiting, and for me to get up so that we could play Uno together. Like, this was his passion, and just spend time together. And so this one particular night, I had really kind of an incredible dark night of the soul experience, where I just felt everything collapsing around me. It was very similar to the experience that I had in Albany, and it scared me deeply. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm standing on the abyss again. I'm in a foreign country. I mean, I had friends there, but I didn't have the kind of connections yet that I was like, oh my God, if I fall apart, like I'm going to have the support that I need to get through this. Anyway, so, but that night, and I went through this for hours. It was hours of just feeling my identity stripped away and feeling this dissociative state. And I was terrified. I can't even find the words. Terror doesn't even explain it. But then, and I think because of all of the relationships that I had built over the years, over my own training as a therapist, over my own reading and education in diving into more spiritual literature and reading from people who had spiritual experiences, that I felt grace. There's no other way to explain it, that grace reached down and just bathed me in comfort and light. And that was as beautiful, and I don't have the words for how connected and safe and held by the universe. That was as powerful as the feeling of falling apart was. And this all happened in the space of maybe like 5 or 6 hours. And so the next morning, I wake up, and that 8-year-old child is sitting on the end of my bed. He had never come into my room without permission, and he's sitting on the end of my bed. And I was like, oh, good morning, Suri. Like, hello, how are you today? And I was like, I'm curious, like, you came into my room and you're here with me. You just came right in, and I'm so happy to see you. And he was like, he's like, I knew that you needed me this morning. And so another experience of that, like, connection of someone, an energetic relationship, and that he was there. Okay, so that's amazing in itself. But then later that day, this is right at the beginning of the pandemic, and things were all shutting down. And this other woman had come to the center that I was staying at. She was from the Netherlands, and she comes into the center. And I had already known this young boy. I think at this point it was probably a month. And so she comes in, and he introduces herself. She asks him, what's your name? And so we were standing at the entranceway of this community center. There's a big glass plate, and they have paintbrush. So it's like a Buddha board, where you have the paintbrush, you write on it, and it dries and goes away. And this is like, an 8-foot piece of frosted glass with paintbrushes and water next to it. And he starts to write his name, and his name is Surrender. And he looked at me, and he said, "I told you I've been here all along." And the message that I got the night before, in the midst of this huge transformation and crisis and beautiful holding of the universe, was, "You have to surrender." That was what kept coming back again and again and again. You have to surrender. You are safe, but you have to surrender, that you're not going to be able to make this next, kind of developmental, you're not going to be able to move into this next developmental phase unless you surrender. And the fact that that was his name, that was like another thing that just really was like a big, like catalyst for my deeper growth.
Well, it must have been the glance he gave you too.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't a glance. He peered into my soul.
Right.
Yes,
So,
yes.
oh, that's just so touching, and that's fascinating. The psychiatrist part of me has all these little, you're making all these neurons fire, and I'm thinking, if I heard that back in the day, could I have been able to hold that and say, okay, is that some sort of manic pathology or is it something else? And
Good
I,
question.
yeah, I mean, I'm really, you make me stop and think, and it's like, so you mentioned the Enneagram. The good news and the bad news together is I'm a classic 0.6 on the Enneagram, which means I have a committee in my head.
Yes.
Bad news is I have a committee in my head.
Yes.
The good news is I can see all of these possibilities,
Yes.
and I hope I would have been able to hold it. It's kind of like, okay, are you safe? Are you functioning okay? How's your sleep? How's your appetite? Are you taking your
Yes,
meds?
of course. The basic
Well,
question. Yep.
da
Nope.
da da da
Then
da. And then it's
anytime.
like, well, this interesting thing happened. Tell me more, the usual stuff.
Yep.
And so I was in a group once, and I don't know the details. I was really struck by this. So I was doing mind body training with James Gordon, who he's still doing this work. He's with the Center for Mind Body Medicine, and he's a psychiatrist. So there were like hundreds of people, and we broke into small groups and had 10 small group sessions that were really intensive. So he handpicked the psychiatrists that there were, various. You didn't have to be a psychiatrist to go to this. So, but he had, we were all MDs. And at first I thought that was an accident. And he said, oh, no, I do this on purpose. And no offense to MDs, I can say this because I'm an MD. It's like, you don't want to put 10 MDs together in a small group. The only thing worse would be putting 10 medical students together in a small group. And he kind of laughed. And so we did this, and we're going around introducing each other. At some point, as we got to know each other during somewhere in those 10 sessions, one of the psychiatrists happened to be a woman, had their license suspended because they were insisting she was manic depressive, had a manic episode, was delusional. And she said, I have to go along with this. And I think she was in treatment and probably getting her license back. But she said, you know, I don't think that was it. I think I had an and you know, it's you know, and like I said, like we were saying before, and I think you're open to this, I think there are people who think they're having a spiritual experience and they're having either a manic episode or a depressive delusion. And, you know, I've seen people really suffering and they're having hallucinations and delusions. And there's basically nothing spiritual about it, unless they're so open that they get flooded and they can't hold it. You know, I mean, I'm the
Yes.
one that too. And but it works the other way around too.
Yes.
I'm hoping it sounds like you were able to find mental health workers who could hold this tension and let you work through what the experiences were, and you were open to both sides as well.
Well, I
So.
will tell you that the real, I think, the best help that I received was from a therapist in Rochester, and she also holds a master's in divinity. And I saw her for, I believe it was 3 years, and I saw her, I had been going through like a little bit of a difficult time going through a separation. And that's when I started seeing her. But I was pretty stable actually when I was seeing her, and I wanted to have a therapist preemptively. And because I just knew, like, okay, I'm going through a separation, it's a tough time, so I want to make sure that I have support to go through that. But she was also with me through a very severe major depressive episode. And it was almost, I think, in addition to, as I shared, having medication, which helped with the biochemical side of it. It was her absolute, like, being able to have these the therapeutic conversations with me that were, excuse me, that were focused on the spiritual aspects of what were happening to me. Not only did she not pathologize it, she had shared with me, which I think helped a great deal. She said, I've been a therapist for a long time, and I've not heard of people that have had the kinds of experiences that you've had. And, but it was never a question. And she was crystal clear with me about everything that you are saying. It may or may not be in alignment with what I know as a therapist, but I can tell you that it is in 100% alignment with what I know about the spiritual experience. And so, like, I had already, read Saint Teresa of Avila, and I had read many of those texts, and Dark Night of the Soul, Saint John of the Cross, all of that. But we were able to use that framework as a way for me to process this, because the I think part of what exacerbates for many people, I think for people that maybe do have these experiences, what exacerbates it, as I said before, is that no one else is seeing what you're seeing. Right? You're just having the experience within yourself. So, for example, what happened with Surrender when I was in India, like, no one knows what was going through my mind that night, right? But I know for a fact that that boy showed up in my room when he had never come into my room before. And he revealed his name to me. In the context of sharing his name with another person, he had never done that before either. And so, and there are multitude of experiences. I mean, if we had 3 hours, there's, at least another dozen that I could share with you.
So we only
But,
have, well, go ahead. I'm
well,
sorry.
I was say, but the thing is that there are two pieces to this that really have helped me to integrate them. To integrate the experiences and not think that they're crazy. One is that I have had shared experiences with other people, right? I've had experiences that other people have shared with me that or have witnessed it happening to me. Those are few and far between, but enough times with enough profundity that it's like, oh yeah, I know something is going on. There were situations where I had a feeling that something was going to happen, and I say and I verbalized it, and it happens. So it's like there have been enough situations where it has been validated that it's like, okay, yes, there is something going on here. But I will tell you the other aspect that I think is super, super important that is like, the part that I still wrestle with is this is also part of the four personality type for the Enneagram for people who know there's a huge desire to be unique, right? That I don't fit in, that I'm different, that I'm special. And it's really challenging. And it was really challenging for me when I did my Enneagram and discovered the four aspect of myself and saw that, because it then threw all of the, like those experiences that I had, I went back and reevaluated them. Like, wait, did it really happen that way? Is am I really exceptional in these ways? And like, what is that? But so for me, the hesitation of talking with people about those spiritual experiences is I don't want to be perceived as, oh, you think you're so special, right? That kind of very pejorative, like, oh, you just think you're so special and you're so unique. And I'm not attached to the idea of being unique. It's just those are the experiences that I've had since I was a child. And so for me, that's where that hesitation comes to talk about it. And it's usually quite a long time. It's ironic that I'm like revealing this on a podcast, but that it's usually a very long time and developed intimacy with someone before I share those kind of things with them.
I really appreciate it. So we only have 10 or 15 minutes left. So you ready for the two big questions I have for you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Question number one, I'm going to give
Yes.
you both questions and you decide how to answer them. Question
Sure.
number one is, has having the experience of having bipolar disorder, including acute episodes of mania and depression, and I don't know, I don't want to, and maybe minor swings in between,
Yes.
has that opened you more to having spiritual experiences? That's question number one. And number two is, have the spiritual experiences exacerbated or helped you're dealing with, I don't want to say dealing with, has it exacerbated or helped your the bipolar disorder? Has it made it worse? Has it made it better? Or is it just two things happening in parallel and they don't interact?
Two great questions. And the first one, as you were asking the question, it was what came to mind was chicken or the egg, right? And so for me as a child, at that time, there was no diagnosis for manic depression, in the 1970s and 80s when I was growing up for children, right? That's been a more recent development. It was rare. But I had the spiritual experiences first. And I think that the how I've processed it at this point in my life is I think that the bipolar breakdown was a result, in fact, of having spiritual experiences outside of a framework that could support and help me with those experiences. So one of the things that that I've leaned into a lot in terms of more reading than experiencing is like looking at shamanic cultures and indigenous culture, where people that had even children, right, that have experiences that are outside of what we would call normative behavior, those are the very people that are sort of pulled aside by the shamans and are like, okay, we need to work with this, right? That there's a belief that there's something that this is a gift that this person is bringing into the world, and the community immediately surrounds that person to help provide a framework for it. And I didn't have that. To no fault, of anybody in my life, it was just out of the purview of what, the people in my life were capable of holding. And so for me, the especially that severe, manic depressive episode, that the first time when I was hospitalized, I feel like it broke everything open. It finally became something in the world that people could put a label on and identify that, oh, there's something going on here. And so we're going to get her some support. Now, I was lucky in that that the first psychiatrist that I had was very helpful and beneficial. And like I said, came from a psychodynamic orientation, and wasn't trying to just be like, oh, just change your thoughts and, it's all going to go away and you're going to be fine. It wasn't like that at all. So I feel like there was a relief, honestly, that came after the diagnosis, because I was like, oh my gosh, people can, I, there's a name for this, right? That the world can understand, and the label was actually liberating for me. And I know for so many people, it's the exact opposite, that you get a label and you feel hemmed in by it. For me, it was so liberating, and it also gave me a place to position my spiritual experiences, right? So if I was having things that were, kind of atypical or outside of normative behavior, it was pretty easy for me to be like, okay, that could be a part of my, or being able to use that narrative with people, right? Like, oh, this could be just a byproduct of, a manic episode, whatever. In myself, it was a multi-year process of for me to be able to distinguish that. Oh, maybe those experiences weren't really spiritual experiences. Maybe they were a product of mental illness. However, now it's 30 years after the first hospitalization, and I am absolutely convinced that it's the other way around, that it was the spiritual experiences didn't, I didn't have the right context to hold them. And had I had that, had I mean, I often had fantasized like, oh my God, if I had been, born in some indigenous culture surrounded by shamans, like my entire life path would be completely different.
So you're bringing up a really important point. So more and more, I've become a real believer in the holding environment. And
Yes.
psychotherapeutically, I've always been more of a Rogerian.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And as a in my spiritual work as a guide and a teacher, it's very similar. And some of this is unanswerable. You'd have to do, I don't even know if you, I don't know if you could do a study. So there was this, I'm kind of rambling a little, but there was this conference I went to on psychopharmacology. This is decades ago. And they were talking about the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. And they were beginning to realize that Prozac could help with some of the symptoms. And this was hardcore psychopharmacology. So that's what that's what I signed up for, and that's what I wanted to learn about. He did a, he said a, it was a very interesting thing. He said, what we started to discover, and I can't remember how they were able to do this, that people with post-traumatic stress disorder, they could get a brain image and on Prozac successfully treated. So there was, it had a therapeutic effect. There were structural changes in the brain that they could. Okay. So that was, that in and of itself is interesting. And then the psychopharmacologist says, you know what's interesting? People successfully treated with psychotherapy show structural changes in their brain.
And meditation.
He didn't get into meditation, but okay, I'll buy
But
it.
it's true. I mean, there, if you
Well,
do, if when you look at fMRIs of people that have been long-term meditators, there are structural differences in
yeah,
them as well.
right. So, so here's what was impressive is this researcher who probably I didn't expect to hear about psychotherapy. And he said, obviously, you want to know which one is going to do which. If you could figure out ahead of time which treatment is going to work for different kinds of post-traumatic stress disorder, that would be so helpful that some people need medication, some people need psychotherapy. I don't think we're there yet, but it's just an interesting phenomena. And then the other one, and I think this is soft data, is there was beginning to be data that this is the holding environment. Kids who go through significant trauma as children, retrospectively, people with bipolar disorder often had that. They had significant trauma as kids. I'm not sure it worked the other way around. Prospectively, if you have trauma as a kid, that doesn't mean you're more likely to have bipolar disorder. But retrospectively,
Yes.
one, it brings up the issue about, well, maybe it's a misdiagnosis. It's really post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right, right.
What the question really that fascinates me, and that's really important in our discussion, is could it be that if you have experiences, especially early in life, and you don't have an environment that can help you deal with it, literally creates structural changes in your brain, not just chemical ones, but structural. Because you're a developing organism,
Of course.
you're a kid, your brain's going to change. It's supposed to
Of
change.
course.
So, this whole issue about can we help people just by, not just by having the correct holding environment? And then, as adults or even as kids, so my work as a child psychiatrist, I thought I was going to wind up doing play therapy. I wound up using medications with kids. That's how I got my reputation. And locally, I was the one who started to work on bipolar disorder in kids,
Right,
prepubertal.
right.
And I didn't see that coming. That had to do with an experience I had in training. And
Right.
this whole idea of is it pathology? Is it something else? The reality that I think you're speaking to is it can be both. And they can influence each other. They can help each other. So I think somebody with bipolar disorder, like you're describing, you may be more open to things that people without bipolar disorder don't have.
Yes.
Changes your nervous system
Exactly. Yes.
and makes you more open
Yes.
to experiences. So a psychiatrist
Yes.
might say, oh, that's a manic whatever. Well, maybe, but it could
Right.
also be you're just more open to have things that anybody
Yes.
can have, but you just get it.
Yes, I believe that. Yes,
Right.
absolutely.
So,
Yes. And just one thing that I just want to kind of wrap up what you were saying about the holding environment. So I was adopted, and I part of what helped me therapeutically, I should say, with my therapist and the way that she held the space for me was that she talked about, kind of the when we talk about archetypes and we talk about Jung, and she was like, there's an archetype. She said, if you look at an archetype of sort of the spiritual, like the person who's open more spiritually, perhaps. Like we talked about Harry Potter, right? Who's an orphan and who has, sort of gone through this very early trauma, and that there's something about that state of coming into the world that also made me more open. And that I don't fully have, I don't have a full understanding of that. That's something that I still am working through and processing and making sense of. But my therapist was kind of the first one who was like, if you look, there is a relationship between, kind of being adopted, not being connected with your biological family, and sort of having to have this extreme awareness to your environment, right? Because you can't automatically assume that you're safe, because in your early, however much time went by before you were adopted, you didn't have that deep holding environment. And so for me, how I've understood it is that there was always a sense that the universe was holding me, right? That I didn't, that whether or not I had someone in my world holding me,
Right.
the universe was always there holding me. And that was exceedingly important. And I think that perhaps in some ways, that's why I felt this deep connection with God, or with, whatever the spirit world was because of that. Like I feel deeply held by the universe. And that could be because I needed that, right? Like I needed to have that sense of like this, this permanent being there looking out for me, because the life, like being manifested in this life in a physical form, was so unstable in my beginning, right? And we now understand that adoption is an extreme trauma. It's a very, very traumatic for children, and that because we now know about, the bonding hormones, right? You have the oxytocin and the vasopressin and all of those things that are really, really critical in the earliest stages of bonding. And now we know that, and we've compensated for that, where we have people holding babies. But in 1971, that was not happening, right? And so my life started off in this very isolated way.
Right.
And so I just want to say that, like, as far as the holding environment, my therapist was so key in helping to for me to see that and to see the connection between that, this being adopted and having this very uncertain beginning laid the foundation for me to be more open spiritually. And I just thought that that was such a profound awareness and awakening for me.
You speaking as a psychiatrist, you really lucked out. You
I
found
really lucked out.
you really lucked out. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm denigrating my profession, but it's that's why I shared with you the story of getting yelled at. You're going to go into psychiatry,
Right.
and it's like, the more medicine in general. We're going faster and faster in the world, and medicine's going faster and faster, including psychiatry. So
Right.
checklists, insurance pressures, you have to, everything
Right.
done yesterday. And it's pushing in the, for me, it pushes in the direction of you can't establish that holding environment. And that's, so you're really
Yeah,
highlighting.
it's more of the medical model.
What really strikes me, and I so appreciate about getting to know you and your story and your willingness to talk about it, is we're all human beings. And so if you have bipolar disorder or depression or personality struggles, that doesn't cut you off from spiritual experiences. We're a whole being, they interact. And the real secret
Absolutely.
is, how do you help empower somebody to be who they are, given whatever the circumstances are, to be
Yes.
as to maximize the meaning in their life? And for you, okay, you have
Yes.
challenges with bipolar disorder, you also have spiritual experiences, but because of all the other factors, you're able to put these together in a way that allows you to be whole and to know more of who you are and what you have to offer. And if that includes taking
Yes.
medicine and being in therapy, you do it. And if
Absolutely.
you don't have that challenge, they don't do it. They have another challenge. They'll go do something else.
Yes.
So look
Yes.
at this has been absolutely wonderful. Any last thoughts you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I feel like I when I look at, whatever the label is of, bipolar or having spiritual experiences, because we don't really have a label for that, that I am so, I feel really deeply blessed for this life journey that I've had. And if anything, it has taught me that I am held by the universe. There are so many situations that there's no way that I could have made sense of or would even be alive today if not for the intervention of the universe. And whatever that means for people, whatever works for you, if it's God, if it's goddess, if it's, no matter what that language is that makes you feel connected, I feel like the thing that I evangelize the most is that we live in a benevolent universe. The universe is here to manifest itself through us and to open yourself up to the grace of love with a capital L, of T with a capital, truth with a capital T, and to just like relax and allow that co-creation with this something much larger than yourself. And when you get into that place, I swear it's just a never un ever never unending series of miracles. And you will be capable of doing things and feeling things and developing levels of compassion beyond your own limited capabilities. And I just want people to walk away with that sense that there, if you are having spiritual experiences, if you are having experiences that are atypical, that it is often an invitation, and to feel what you feel about it and talk to people. Don't hide it. Talk to people that you trust and talk to people that will hear you and hold a non-judgmental space for you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lisa. I hope we have more conversations.